phone knows that between 9 and 9:30 you are surfing. And all of a sudden, this one day between 9 and 9:30, there is no activity. So yeah. It's like, it's hard to commit a crime.
Welcome to Compromising Positions. I'm Leanne Potter, cyber anthropologist and head of security operations for a major retailer.
And I'm Jeff Watkins, a cybersecurity enthusiast and CTO for a major tech consultancy. Together, we're the award-winning tech podcast that asks non-cybersecurity professionals what we in the industry can do to make their lives easier.
And help make our organizations more prepared to face ever-changing human-centric cyber threats. Happy anniversary, Jeff.
Whoa, yeah, our podcast is now officially 1 year old.
Indeed it is. Many happy returns, and we've loved every minute of it. So here's to more years to come. But for now, who have we got on today?
Today we're joined by Kelly Paxton. Kelly has more than 20 years of investigative experience. She's a certified fraud examiner, author and podcast host of Fraudish. This week's episode asks, why is it so hard to commit a crime these days? When people do, what's their motivation behind it?
You can really hear in this episode what good time we're having recording this, so join us as we do a deep dive into
the nature of surveillance and how it can be used to catch criminals, but also the implications of being willing to bring in snooping devices into your home and life. Yes, I'm looking at you, iPhone.
And how fraud in the workplace happens, what are the signs to spot for, and how to prevent it from happening. Keep your eye on Helga, that's all I'm saying.
And how sometimes it's not so pretty in pink, as we explore Kelly's specialism, pink collar crime.
Ooh, which isn't what you think it is. Now, just a little note, I'm really sorry, there appears there was something wrong with my mic during the recording of the episode. Luckily it gets better, but do stick with it because you don't want to miss Kelly's insights. I'm really sorry.
We love this chat and we think you will do too. So sit back and enjoy our interview with Kelly Paxton.
Welcome to Compromising Positions. We have got a fantastic guest with us today. We have Kelly Paxton, and she is a certified fraud examiner, private investigator, and professional speaker. She's also the founder of Fraudish, which used to be called the Great Women in Fraud podcast, and she has published a book called Embezzlement, How to Prevent, Detect, and Investigate Pink Collar Crime. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is an honor and a delight.
Wonderful. I'm so excited about this. I've been such a fan of your show for so long, and so having you here is very, very exciting, and apologies if I fangirl out. So that was a very brief introduction, but you have quite the background and history. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I kind of say my career has been all about money. So I started out thinking that I would go into finance. My dad was in finance, so I was a commodities trader, a stockbroker, a bond trader, and I learned how people saved and invested money. And then we had a client who was hinky, as we say, and a special agent from U.S. Customs called me, and I was pretty young at the time, and she's like, do you know Alan Taylor? And I giggled, and I was like, oh, is that what we're calling him today? And this was before Know Your Customer, so this was not anything. We thought maybe he grew some pot. We were out in Oregon, so we thought, well, he probably grew pot or something like that. Well, it turns out that Alan Taylor committed wire fraud, and she learned a lesson, and I learned a lesson. So the lesson for her was, never call or send a subpoena to a local office, because the local office is all about protecting that client. The headquarters has compliance and all that, and they will stop. So the client took the money and ran. Now, she caught him. All is good. He went to prison. But I called her up and I said, I want to do what you do. So, you know, it's the government, so it takes a little bit longer. But I became a special agent for U.S. Customs. And then I learned how people stole money. So that's the second part of the
money. You started off being interested in how to make money, and then you're like how do I steal it? Not for a personal gain, was it, Kelly, at all? Was it find out which way you can do it both ways?
And then my husband got a job in the middle of the country, and I couldn't do customs work, and so then I kind of dabbled in things, but now I do fraud. Like, I don't do fraud. I teach and train about fraud, and it's basically, people make really poor decisions when it comes to money. Good people make bad decisions. Bad people make good decisions. And the thing is money is replaceable. Still, we don't make great decisions based on money. We have very short-term thinking. And so this is why I say my career's always been about money, and it's kind of people's relationship with money. So that's the long version.
That is some story. And a great example of, if there's a career you fancy, don't hesitate to reach out to that person and say, hey, how did you get there? How can I do what you do? I think that's a really fantastic example. And people have approached me and said, oh, how did you get into your career, I'm always happy to help. I think that's a really good kind of tip there that you just shared. So the reason why I brought you onto the show is because I think there's been a lot of discourse about fraud and what fraud means. And particularly when it comes to cybercrime, for example, you know, it's a type of fraud nowadays, very much linked to financial fraud and deception and things like that. What's your sort of experience on what you're seeing in the fraud industry? What are they thinking about when it comes to sort of cybercrime? Do they see it as something separate, or do they see it as something that's just part of the tapestry of fraud these days? How do they perceive it?
I was just having this conversation with a great investigator out of Canada. And the thing is technology is going to help us as fraud investigators, but it's really going to help the fraudsters. And I mean, I joke that we only catch the low-hanging fruit, but I mean, there are people, I talk a lot about fraud in pop culture. And I don't know if you've seen the most recent movie, The Beekeeper, with Jason Statham, which...
No, but do you see that? You can't see that, audience, but you should have seen Jeff's face, like a massive Jason Statham fan. So he's trying to get me to watch it. Go on, tell me all about The Beekeeper.
So it's, you know, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, and it gets very Jason Statham, where there's things blowing up and knives and guns and all that sort of
stuff. Is he playing an American with a British accent in it? Because that's like his thing.
No, he's just an American. He's got an interesting background. And this woman that he is living on her property, being a beekeeper, she's an older Black woman who gets taken by a cyber. You've got a call here because your computer's been infected. And I don't want to give a spoiler, but it ends very badly. And I joked, and my mom has been gone for a while, but I joked, I wouldn't let her have a computer because she would have been sending stuff everywhere or hitting buttons that she shouldn't have. She didn't even have a smartphone before she passed. Thank goodness. So, like, I'm not a cyber person, but you've got to know a cyber person. And I also recorded an episode for Fraudish the other day, and I do a speed round of, you know, what do you say when fraud? And one person answered phone. Your phone.
Interesting.
Holds so much data and patterns. And so I was saying, if you were to commit a crime, and I joke that I would never commit insurance fraud because my insurance company has known me since I was 30. Mm-hmm. And they know every pattern. They know when I pay my bills, when I don't pay my bills. I was just doing my auto pays the other day, and I got this little pop-up that said, congratulations, you're spending less money this month than last month. And I was
cheers.
Like, well, last month I was traveling, so that's why I was spending more money. But it made me think, like, okay, so does that mean I should take that money and save it? Does it mean I should go buy some more? But they know basically day to day how much on average I am spending. And so say you wanted to go, and this is my example. I don't know if you guys heard about the dog shit company. Can I say that word?
Yeah, of course.
Dog poop company. There was a company that you could anonymously put dog poop on people's doorsteps.
I did hear about this. Yes, I did.
And it got hacked. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, everyone knew who was sending dog poop to people. So just say, I wanted to put some dog poop on someone's doorstep. But
you've got that extra income now, though, Kelly.
Yeah, I know. I could just hire it and pay via Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But so say you're like, okay, I want to go put dog poop on someone's doorstep. You know what? Are you going to get in your car that tracks you? Are you going to bring your phone to be able to get to that address where that person lives? Or are you going to leave your phone at home? And say you do it like right around nighttime, darkness. Your phone knows that between 9 and 9:30, you are surfing. And all of a sudden, this one day between 9 and 9:30, there is no activity. It's like, it's hard to commit a crime. Like, at least I think for people like us, because we think—
It's so hard to commit a crime these days, e-bygum.
It's so easy, but it's so hard. Like, I kind of think if you're a good person, and you kind of slow down and go, okay, I'm going to do the dog poop. You're like, oh God, they can track me. But if you're a bad person, you're going to say, well, I'm going to go get a burner phone. So there's two sides of that coin for cyber, I think. It can be good or evil. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think it is interesting as more telemetry gets built into devices, more and we're wearing more smart devices. A statistic that often surprises people is that in the UK we have more CCTV, the most in the world, I believe, though the most surveilled country in the world. It is getting hard to get away with a crime.
China, don't they? People always think it's China, actually.
Yeah.
So I saw something, and this is crazy, and people are going to go, oh my God, I cannot believe she watches this. Okay, so you know the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, they have a show.
Yes, because I was on a flight a few months ago, and the person next to me binged it the entire time. And I was like, what are you watching? And she told me that's what she was watching. So yes, I do know of the show now.
So my daughter is home for the summer, and we decided to watch it. And there is an episode where one of the cheerleaders says that a cameraman put his hand around her waist and touched her butt, and she made a police report. It was a big to-do in the show and everything like that. And I'm sitting there, my investigator head is like, you know how many cameras are in the stadium? And so then it goes on, and spoiler alert, the Arlington, Texas Police Department said that, you know, they couldn't, there was no video of it. I find that incredibly difficult to believe in a stadium that is that high tech that they couldn't get that right angle.
Absolutely. Also, and people always just recording stuff as well. People are always just like have their phones out recording stuff. Another thing that they might have been able to use is if she was wearing a smartwatch, any kind of spikes in heart rate or anything like that, because they've used that in, I believe, in murder trials to establish time of death in terms of like this person was terrorized at this point, their heart rate went shoop, straight up, but then obviously no heart rate. So they were this is exactly when it happened, that the murder took place at this time, which I think very interesting, using tech for that investigative purpose.
Imagine your Google phone saying, you're breathing much less than usual. Well done.
Well, so are you guys big fans of Reddit?
Yeah.
I am, but it's a guilty pleasure.
Love it to do with dogs.
So where I live, there's a very pretty active Reddit thread, and someone got hit by a car. And so they put out there, hey, anyone at Third and whatever, did you by chance see this? Did you, you know, so you kind of, and I don't want to call it vigilante because it isn't vigilante at all, but they're asking for help if anyone had seen it. And I don't know, this is a shout out to Avi Klein. Do you guys follow Avi?
No, I'm not familiar with Avi. Tell me and the listeners.
Okay. Avi Klein is amazing. AviKlein. He's on LinkedIn. He posts great stuff. He is a lawyer turned investigator. And that means he's an actual real investigator, not a lawyer. And he posts great stuff. He had a post, and this was a while ago, and I've had him on my podcast, and I just love his stuff. We have tow trucks, and tow trucks have license plate readers. And so I didn't realize it until his article, or, you know, his blog post. And now every time a tow truck goes by me, I look for the license plate readers. And they're looking to like repo cars.
Yeah.
And there's just so much data out there. So you guys should have him on your podcast. I love Avi. He just posts amazing stuff. And he's a real boots on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of our traffic lights nowadays have cameras to check for people not paying their car road tax and things like that. But also, there was I don't know if you saw this in the news, there's this really creepy bot that in the UK would scan all of our CCTV if you had an Instagram image, and would match the CCTV, a few seconds of the CCTV, with you taking that picture in public. It was the creepiest thing I've ever seen, and it actually worked as well.
Wow.
So the images, there's like, you can still find images that got taken down eventually. You can still find images out there of people, you know, kind of doing the selfie thing, or somebody taking a picture of them, and then the CCTV angle, which is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we grew up with paparazzi and celebrities getting followed and everything. But now, like, you know, anyone, there's so many ways that you can surveil someone. And when I was a special agent for U.S. Customs, I liked nothing better than a good surveillance, as long as it was moving. I liked moving surveillances. But no one did that. But now it's like, I was driving the other day with my daughter, and someone was following us, a friend. And she's like, Mom, slow down. Not everyone can follow people as well as you follow people. And it's just like, but now do we need to? Like, I have a friend.
Yeah.
I have a friend whose garage door notified notifies her husband when the garage door opens and closes. Now, that's great for them, but what if it's a stalker or an ex-boyfriend or husband who, you know, and you hear about trackers being put on cars? It's frightening.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
So on a slightly different topic, you're a specialist in dishonesty in the workplace. So, I mean, I think in cybersecurity, we talk a lot about things like insider threats. So dishonesty in the workplace, I mean, what does that entail and what should we be looking out for?
Oh, well, okay. So there's like, what is the statistic? Like 4% of the population are narcissists. And then we have, you know, he said, she said investigations. And there's been studies and, you know, some of them have been pulled back or retracted about creative people are more likely to bend the rules and or cheat. So I worked for a large shoe manufacturer and, you know, my mind has actually kind of changed on this topic recently. You could have a designer who would go, let's say, to a tropical beach for a week and expense the whole trip because they needed inspiration for the perfect color of blue for the, you know, colorway. Now, if that designer designed a lot of shoes that sold a lot, well, you might look at it a different way. But maybe the designers hit a rough patch. Then do they get to sit on the beach for a week when they haven't designed something that like, so just because someone works at a legitimate business doesn't mean they can't, you know, push the envelope, God forbid steal. Like, yeah.
So do you think that's in a way connected to the fact that it depends on the value of that individual then? So we look away from maybe rule benders or even rule breakers if, you know, maybe they are performing well or they provide X to the business. So as an organization, you might have a stance like, no, don't take the piss when it comes to your expenses. That's ridiculous. However, Bob's doing really well. Jane's doing really well. We will let that expense fly under the radar, maybe. So there's something to say about organizations also have a part to play in that in terms of dictating the morality. Yeah, yeah.
So the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners, they do a report to the nations and they have shown, and I have seen it anecdotally, the higher up someone is, the less likely they are to be punished, let alone terminated, let alone prosecuted. So you'll get an executive assistant who starts buying her daily Starbucks on the company credit card. She could be prosecuted versus someone who brings in millions of dollars. You know, he's been so good. She's been so good. We're going to coach them to not do that. I had an example recently, personally, where it was a financial matter and someone gave me wrong advice about an account. And I had a deadline on being able to do a transaction. So I get closer to the deadline and I call up and I was like, you guys haven't done this. And I had it date marked when I called. And, you know, everyone records the phone calls. Like, you know, you're on a recorded line. Yeah, yeah. So I said, you know, I called on this date. The woman told me that they would allow the transfer, blah, blah, blah. And it hasn't been done. And we're getting close to the tax deadline. And she goes, yeah, well, the woman was wrong. And we're going to coach her. And I said, coaching her doesn't compound interest on this account for the next, you know, dozens of years. No. And I just couldn't believe that they said that they were going to coach her. And had I not called back, I would have missed the deadline. But like, it was just like, okay, so you're going to coach someone, but it's actually very financial. It would have been very financially detrimental to me. Now, they did make it right, but I had to be on top of them for like 10 days. So that's kind of a long-winded answer. But you know, there is tone at the top. And I talk a lot about in a small, because I specialize in sort of crime on Main Street. I don't specialize in the big Sam Bankman-Fried, the Bernie Madoff, or the Enron. I specialize in the water district, the soccer club, the HOA. And those are like real life things that we see and do. They're yes. with us. So
whereas your Bernie Madoffs, they're like your big behemoth businesses that kind of sometimes when they fall, it doesn't hurt, does it? You know, because you don't feel the immediate impact.
Unless you're part of the crypto exchange that went under, which is quite a lot of people.
So FTX, I have heard recently, now I haven't verified it, but I'm pretty sure it's true. Bitcoin has recovered and he made a lot of very good investments into the AI, like Anthropic. The investors are going to get back more than they put in, which is shocking.
But that's only by luck, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's like dumb luck.
So, Kelly, then, does crime pay?
Oh, so I'm having these conversations because I'm doing a bunch of batching of my podcasts. And I was talking to a friend who is a behavioral economist, behavioral scientist. And it's like, humans are irrational. And that's how she got into behavioral science. She was an economist by trade. And she's like, but humans aren't rational. So we're making all these things for rational people and they're not. So she's gotten into this. And I said, okay, for example, say that crime doesn't pay. But what if you steal $50 million and you only go to prison for 2 years? Does it pay? I don't know. And everyone has a price. Now, some people's price can be very high. Mine is so high, family, you know, children, that. But other people's price is very low. But then, like, you could say, well, I'm not going to steal because you go to jail. But some people would say, well, for 2 years in prison for getting $50 million and they can't find it because I've hidden it so well, maybe that is the rational thing to do. These conversations are kind of crazy.
The area you work in, what is the kind of impact of the dishonesty in the workplace, and kind of what does it matter to the people impacted?
So on Main Street, the owner of the business will never look at his workers again the same, or her workers again the same. Money is replaceable. You hopefully have insurance, or, you know, some businesses have literally gone in and cleaned things up and their businesses have taken off after a theft. But, you know, they're never going to look at people the same. I mean, I joke that I'm a fraud therapist, because this is the other thing. Like Sam Bankman-Fried or Bernie Madoff, you didn't see and touch the money, really. But this is a person who has come into the office, the dental office, the water district, you know, the little manufacturer, every day, looked at their coworkers, looked at their boss, talked to them, been in their homes, and they have consciously touched the money and taken it. And that is a big difference. Mm-hmm. And so,
I guess with those people, you know, the people you're working with every day, from your experience, are there any things to look out for, any patterns of behavior that might, because in cyber, there are some, like we recently, I think, Leanne, you did a talk on looking at the company reviews on a site called Glassdoor can actually predict insider threats. And I imagine you see a similar kind of thing. There must be some kind of patterns of behavior.
Okay. So number one is vacations. These pink collar criminals, embezzlers, don't take vacations. Or if they do, they're little vacations, like 2 or 3 day junkets to Las Vegas. Why don't they take vacations? Because they don't want anyone looking in their desk. They don't want anyone opening the mail. They don't want anyone doing the deposit at the bank. If your bookkeeper, manager, AR person never takes a vacation, huge. And I call them pink flags. Huge pink flag. If they're control freaks, like again, there was a woman who stole from my water district. She'd go out to lunch and she'd lock everything up. Her office, her desk drawers, her file drawers. She wanted no one in her stuff. No one in her stuff. And again, lifestyle. Now, I'm going to call her, I was calling her Gladys for a while. Never underestimate Gladys. Now I've met someone, and so now I'm going to call her Bonnie. Bonnie's not going to show up in a new Lambo or a Maserati. She might show up, instead of in a Corolla, she might get a Camry.
Right.
So generally, the women embezzlers aren't quite as flashy. Now, of course, there are outliers like Rita Crunwell, who stole $53.7 million, but they're not going to show up in a Lambo. They're just, and I say, like, okay, we just had the Nordstrom's anniversary sale, which in the States is kind of a big deal. And
it's so big that I think even over here we know about it. So.
So I would go to it every year and I would get a pair of fine Italian leather boots. And my husband would say, what'd you get this year? And I would round down. He never had a clue as to what my boots cost. Never had a clue. So when someone does confess to you, and generally they will confess, unless they're a serial embezzler, like a serial grifter, a serial con artist, but the, you know, regular, I've never been arrested before, I got caught. Whatever they say they stole, multiply it by 2 to 6 times because they round down.
I guess that's kind of natural psychological thing, isn't it? Whenever you get something or gain something, you'll round up. And whenever you subtract something, you tend to round down.
Exactly.
So why did they do it, Kelly? Because if I wanted to steal $50 million usually over a good few years, isn't it? We read about news stories in the UK about civil servants stealing lots of money over a few years. What do they do it for if it's not to flat, you know, to buy something? What's the game? I just can't understand that.
Well, I kind of think once they start, they can't stop. And instead of, it's the lifestyle creep. It is keeping up with the Joneses. It is like when I was in my 20s, I had to buy like generic shampoo or Suave shampoo. They say when you get a raise, don't look at the raise, put the amount of your raise into your savings account. Well, yeah. All of a sudden, they're like, I like to go out to Olive Garden instead of McDonald's. My kids like to shop at Nordstrom's instead of Target. And it's that lifestyle creep.
Yeah.
And
makes sense.
A lot of them say it makes them feel good. There was a woman who stole $8 million. I don't make these stories up. They blow my mind. She took her family to see the Pope on stolen money.
there's some culture and things.
Yeah. And I wrote to her.
You explain that to St. Peter.
I wrote to her in prison, and she said, she wrote back to me once and then she got rid of me. But she said, I just wanted to be a good mother. So many people associate more money with a better lifestyle. She worked for a very wealthy family who flew private, and she's like, they look so happy. I mean, I don't know if you guys have watched Succession or Billions. They are not happy. Those people aren't happy. They're only happy when they're doing maybe bad stuff.
And being very, as the saying was, it money can't buy happiness, but it can buy a better quality of misery.
Yeah, exactly. So,
do you think things like a lot more people working remotely? Do you think that's kind of affected things?
Yeah. So I have a colleague who said that right after COVID started, that fraud was going to increase because we also have this distance. So you're in the UK, I'm in Oregon, and say that I worked for you. I don't see you in the office. Mentally, it's easier for me to make a bad decision because you're not like, hey, Kelly, can you come into my office for a second? What are you going to do? Call me up on the phone and say, our brain processes that very differently. It's like cash versus credit cards. When you lay down cash, your brain is like, ugh. When you lay down your credit card, it's like, yeah, the bill's going to come in 30 days.
We found that with when Disney moved to Disney World and things like that, moved to those little NFC straps. People apparently, I think spending went up by double, which is just like blows my mind. Humans are really bad at abstraction.
Well, that's why
I changed from Disney dollars.
Yeah, that's why I love behavioral science as it ties to fraud, because like no one thinks they're going to get ripped off. No one thinks they are. We all think we're too smart. And except, you know, your elderly parents, you're like, well, my parents could get ripped off because, you know, they're just not as quick as they used to be or whatever, something like that. But we don't think that we are going to get ripped off because my favorite thing is trust but verify. Like some people say I'm cynical. I like to say I'm skeptical.
It's a very common phrase in cybersecurity, that, Kelly. So you do know about cybersecurity things. You mentioned earlier pink collar and pink flags. Tell us more about why pink.
When I worked at the U.S. Customs, I arrested your typical bad guys, money launderers, drug dealers, pedophiles. Then I go and I work at a local sheriff's office, and I am the fraud analyst for their fraud enforcement team. And that's when I start seeing fraud or theft on Main Street. And all my suspects but one were women. So I Google, and this is in 2008-09, I Google women embezzlers. And the term pink collar crime came up by Kathleen Daly. Mm-hmm. Now, it is very, very important. Hashtag, it's position not gender. In the United States, 90% of bookkeepers are women. So I'm not picking on women. And this is the actual definition that popularized in 1989. Low to medium level employees, comma, primarily women, comma, who steal from the workplace. It's embezzlers. If I say, you know, come learn about embezzlement, people are like, you know, that's boring. But if I say, catch me if you can, today's pink collar criminal, they're like, ooh, that's sexy. So, but I just, these people that I was working on the cases in the sheriff's office, they lived amongst us. One of the detective's worst day as a detective was arresting a woman who worked at her child's school who had stolen hundreds of thousands of dollars. She was a perfect mom. She's just gutted to arrest her. Like, it was just so sad. And so it made me look at crime very differently. And that's, I'm fascinated by it. And that got into more of the sort of behavior of it. Because like, when I was drug dealers, they're just, it's all about the money. It's just all about the money.
Yeah.
And the status of like, you know, with the cartel and stuff like that.
And they do go around in the Lambos and things like that. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, but this was like, it was people you would never expect. And, you know, you read these stories and it's like, as far as the coworkers, I would have never thought, I can't believe it. And that's the gutting part. And, you know, we have Kevin Bacon's 6 degrees of separation with embezzlement. Mm-hmm. It's two at most. Two. at most. You can.
Wow.
Do you know someone who's been embezzled? I mean, you guys will because you're in the business.
Well, yeah. When you say it like that and you do think it's so close, it did knock me just when you said it and just kind of took my sails out a little bit. Like, yeah, actually, it's really close, isn't it? I've had like money taken off me and things like that, like in a cyber criminal kind of sense as well. So it's just, yeah, we're all kind of touched by crime, aren't we?
Well, it surprised me to learn that like one of the biggest cyber crime, or sorry, one of the large cyber crimes in the UK is actually two cyber crimes in one. It's first of all, it's a WhatsApp or text scam to try and get somebody to hand over money pretending to be a relative. But on the other side, it's in the people who've provided those bank accounts aren't the criminals, they're mules. And they get tricked into a false offer of some get rich, quick, easy work, you know, 1 hour a day, make it, and they get debanked. So I'm surprised at how many people.
That's what a lot of those work from home scams are. Mm. Well, the ad job adverts is quite a lot of muling, like, oh, you accept these packages as well, and things like that.
My kids and their friends, they all think I'm crazy. But like, my kids travel. And yeah. I have a safe word. And like my contemporary friends, they're like, what? And I was like,
no, that's great advice. I know what you're going to say. Go on.
Yeah. So especially also for me, because my voice is all over the internet. With AI, anyone can make my voice, like, you know,
absolutely,
as it is. And my kids, so we have, and I'm going to tell you, my cyber safe word is not pineapple. Okay. It's not pineapple. Mm-hmm. But my kids
know. Don't tell us where it's.
We're not going to say it. My kids know to use this word in a sentence and I know it's legit. And if that word isn't there, I know it's not legit. Every family, especially with the way the world is and we're traveling and stuff like that, you need a safe word. Like, I just, a safe word, a safe phrase. Yeah.
Absolutely. I've said the exact same thing to my mum, because obviously I've got this show here. I do a lot of public speaking that gets recorded. I said, my voice is, I always joke, say that every time I do an episode, it's just to help the hackers along a little bit more. But I've told my mum, if I say this, then you know it's me.
And also, and this is leaking out into the corporate world now, phishing, like voicemail phishing and hacking, 3 times more likely to succeed. And they're even now seeing with deepfake videos in Hong Kong. I think financial director handed over tens of millions of dollars because of seeing a video and voice deep fake of the entire exec team. And it is absolutely terrifying. And we were discussing this at B-Sides Leeds recently on one of the talks. And the other one is always use a second factor, because you get an email or a phone call in, phone them on a different number, or preferably on a different phone as well, or email them to the, you know, known email address, or Slack them, or do something else. Don't go back to the same source, because that factor could be a bad factor.
Absolutely. Oh, another shout out for a guest for you guys, Michal Khan. He's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I saw him at, it was kind of an interesting conference. It was the World Gaming Protection Conference. And he was there. He did a great AI thing that he put together, just, you know, with video. And he's on one of my episodes, a recent one. He is great. So good. I think he's even speaking at DEF CON this year. He just got a big thing, but should have him on your podcast.
Well, they don't come any bigger than that one. So,
yeah.
Did you know that it's estimated that 30% of cyber criminals are actually women, which is actually more than women working in cyber, which I believe the number has gone down recently. It was about 20%. I think it's gone down to 18% this year working in a cyber security on the ethical side. But yeah, 30% of cyber criminals are actually women. Do you think women steal differently from men?
Yeah, they steal less. They steal more often, but they steal less. So
interesting.
Yeah. And that's interesting you bring out about 30% of women are cyber criminals, because we've got these biases, we've got stereotypes. And I mean, I have to admit, like, I love movies and documentaries about fraud and pop culture. And you don't often see the woman do it. But okay, the girl with the dragon tattoo, do you love her? Elizabeth?
She's a badass. Yeah, she's a badass. I can't remember the films actually, but I loved the books. The books were brilliant. Yeah, I loved her as a character.
Yeah, so I think she motivated a lot of women out there that they could do cyber. So not in a good way. Okay, I'm not.
Well, it makes me sad. It's harder for a woman to get legitimately into cybersecurity than it is illegitimately into cybersecurity. That's the
it is really sad
about the industry.
Yeah.
also quite low tech as well in some cases. So some women almost, so I've heard that some people in certain countries are basically kind of trafficked into cyber, being cyber criminals. And some of them, unfortunately, are used as it's easier than deep faking voice or a video, actually used to be what they call pig butchering scams. They call them up and video call with them, which is really unfortunate because I imagine a lot of these people don't actually want to be in these jobs.
Right. Yeah. Did you guys read Number Go Up?
No.
Oh, by Zeke Fox. So it's about crypto. It's really good. And he goes to Southeast Asia where they are doing human trafficking for these type of, you know, scams. I highly recommend that book.
Oh, I'll check that out.
It's one for the show notes on the list, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite books.
But in cybersecurity, cyber fraud is getting to be such a lucrative business that we're seeing instances where it almost from the outside looks like a legitimate business. You know, they've literally got office space, they've got a HR department, they've got a marketing department, they've got a customer service department. So when you get ransomware, you can speak to a customer service representative. So the people, and I know you don't know much about, you know, how they're set up and everything like that. So let's just say the top of the chain, proper wrong-uns. Yeah, they're the bad guys. They know they're doing bad, but it's lucrative. Some people getting hired in to do this job, they must kind of know they're also doing wrong. What is the psychology behind people kind of turning a blind eye to engaging in that kind of work when I guess they almost feel removed, but really they're kind of a part of it?
You know, this is like, so back to the movie Beekeeper, you'll see this like phone center and they're kind of removed.
That's what I was kind of referring to. Yeah.
They're removed from it. There's the whole, I'm going to say, kind of cultural, sociological phenomenon that, like, you know, I got to get my piece. And it's just, I coach and mentor a lot of young professionals, and I always tell them, you've got to have a walkaway fund. And sometimes people don't understand when they get into it. I mean, honestly, Also, I think at places like that, you get sort of a crew mentality. Like you get one person in and then you get that person brings in a couple other buddies. And then it's kind of like this social organism. That's what it kind of seems like to me. Mm. Again, I would say me or my kids would never do that. That comes from a huge place of privilege. What about that kid who doesn't have parents, hasn't had the opportunities, needs to feed their family? Who are we to judge? I mean, I'm not gonna, I don't want anyone to have to do that. But like, it's really hard for us to sit in judgment when we do come from a place where we haven't had to make that decision. There's a woman who was 87 and she stole $27,000 because her husband was dying of cancer. Like, you know, my husband did die of cancer. I was lucky. I had health insurance. He, you know, prepared us for this. But what if me going and having that job meant that my family member could have health care or something like that? And this also comes from age and maturity. I don't have to make those decisions, but there are some people out there that do make those decisions, and they're not going to be my friends, but I also didn't see what they've gone through. If that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. But also I've heard of such, like, how can I put it? The fine line between business and fraud sometimes is so fine. So I had a friend who left the insurance industry because she watched somebody next to her doing a quote for a van for a church. And the quote came up on the terminal. And the quote was like £100. And the guy on the phone went, oh, we can do you this for £1,000, this renewal. And the lady on the phone burst into tears and said, look, you know, we really love you as a customer. So what we can do is we can renew it for £700. And the lady was so thankful, blah, blah, blah. And the person still scalped an enormous amount of money from commission on that. And then my friend, she just like quit the next day. She's like, I can't take this. This is not part of what we're going to part of.
So my book of the year is called Nobody's Fool. I had them on my podcast. Dan Simon and Christopher Chabris. And did you listen to it, Leanne?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, they are so
wonderful. You go ahead.
So they have, right at the beginning of the book, they have a thing about, like, you know, where is that line in business? And your example, Jeff, is that when I was a stockbroker, you know, long, long time ago, I sold a bond and my boss comes over to me and he's like, you know, you could have marked that up. And I looked at him and I was like, but why? This was like a retired guy. And he goes, he still would have gotten a good rate and you would have gotten a good commission. Now, I didn't last in the business very long, but I was just like, I couldn't believe my boss, he was literally chastising me because I didn't mark up the bond. And yeah.
And then you wonder what happens when things like the financial crashes happen and people get done for these kind, suddenly from this is making money and this is beneficial and this is encouraged behavior to, oh no, now you're going to jail for fraud. Like, how much?
That's the danger of incentivized bonuses and things like that, isn't it? Is that if you don't keep it in check, it actually encourages really bad behavior. Because if you're only thinking month to month rather than big picture thinking, it's going to be disastrous, can't it?
Well, and you have, you know, and Danny Kahneman, system one. And system two, our brain goes system one, which is just, you know, quick, two is four. And, you know, it turns out the slower thinking is the more ethical thinking. But we live in a world where we want action. And so I'm doing a new presentation and one of my slides is going to be a stop sign. And then it's also going to be speed bumps because we need those speed bumps. Like if you ever get a deal, if you ever get a deal or an offer where they're like, but you got to do by, you know, 12 p.m. tonight. No. And, you know, I grew up, my mom would say, sleep on it. It's really good advice. We've got to slow down in this crazy fast world. And I listen to a lot of podcasts and I know you know that, Leanne, and I'm just obsessed by it. But it's like, there was someone and he's just like, I'm just clicking through my phone. And he goes, I almost clicked the link that would have just blown up my phone. Because he's like, we're so prone to action. We've got to slow down.
And that's what they're really good at as well. The cyber criminals know that. They know, you know, they fear and uncertainty and doubt, having very time pressured, very emotive, do it now, you'll lose everything if you don't do it now, this is a great deal, yada yada yada. They know this, they know that, you know, system one thinking, it makes us do this.
Yeah, the, one of the biggest ones we get all the time, luckily we have them filtered out, but from our CEO, because obviously at one point LinkedIn got hacked, so everybody knows our CEO's name and email address, going, we need you to, I'm in a meeting, I really need to make this transaction, can you call me back on this number right now? Luckily we've all been made very well aware of that. I'm sure it worked for somebody.
Yeah.
And you've said in the past that just sort of, you mentioned it earlier on as well slightly about good people making bad choices and bad people making good choices, and especially the second part of that, bad people making good choices. Can you go in more detail on this? And
so I don't know if you remember this story, but, and I hope I have it right, because I've talked about it a lot. There was a guy in like Ohio who kidnapped some women, had them in his basement for like decades, years at least. And
I remember the story.
And so some guy's walking by, I think he was a black guy, and he heard a woman yell. He had a criminal history. He went to the police department. Now, who as a felon wants to walk into a police department? No. Mm. If that guy hadn't have done it, as I understand it, those women would still be in that basement. So like, are you going to put yourself, it's like being a witness. Like, you know, one of my favorite TV shows was The Wire. And when something happens, it's like, everyone's like cockroaches. No one will talk, but, and that's what I say when bad people make good choices. And I don't mean bad people. I just mean people that may have a history with like law enforcement that they don't really want to, you know, walk into a police department and say, hey, because they're going to get, we have biases. And the people who are the garden variety embezzlers, they look like us. They are not, I'm going to say, tatted up, pants hanging down the backside of them, driving a lowrider, the type of people that we would cross the street if we were walking down. That's what the people were scared of. Who here has been attacked by a tatted up lowrider? I haven't.
Like, nope, me neither.
We just have these bias. And, you know, I mean, would you tell your kids if you're, I say this, if you're in a store and your kid gets lost, my son did this when he was like, you know, three, I tell him, if you get lost from mommy, go find a nice looking mommy and she'll help you. And if a scary looking dude comes up to you, scream. Now that mommy might have stolen $500,000. And that tatted up guy might have, Mark Wahlberg used to have lots of tats. So we make judgments that just aren't fair.
Didn't he also go to jail for robbing a liquor store while under the influence of PCP?
Yeah.
But yes, he seems to be a reformed character now. I don't think he needs to do that anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
You also talked about tone at the top. How does that affect employees' behaviors? And how do we ensure that the tone at the top, you know, I guess in my case, encourages kind of good security behaviors?
I think, again, on Main Street, you have a business owner and he or she takes their whole family to, say, Aspen, Boston, or let's just say New York City, for a trade show. They bring their whole family. They fly first class. They stay at the Peninsula. They get to go to see Hamilton. The owner of the business comes back and hands the Visa to, or the Black American Express, to Bonnie in the office. And Bonnie's like, so how do you want to split this out? I know you took the family. And they say, it's none of your business. Just pay the bill. Bonnie knows that is cheating. Mm-hmm. Bonnie can't take her kids to the shore. And so that person has just written off, let's say, a $20,000 or $50,000 vacation. And Bonnie's like, what's $200? Like, yeah. So, and employees pay attention. There was a woman who, and I don't know who she was, but dentists get ripped off all the time, which is a whole other thing. But she said, if the dentist talked one more time about one of his European luxury cars having to go in the shop, she was going to take the drill and stick it in his ear. Like, don't flout your success, like, excessively. Yeah. And, you know, that dentist would say, I worked hard. I went to school longer than you do. That's fine. I'm just saying, this is human nature. And we've got the fraud triangle, opportunity, pressure, and rationalization. We can pretty well control for opportunity. We cannot control for rationalization whatsoever, because you don't know what's going on in someone's life, period.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I think you're dead on there.
And the other thing, one of the key things of leadership, lead by example. Now, lead from the front, lead by example, especially when it comes to leaders quite openly breaking the rules. I think I've seen it happen in the past. To be quite clear, not in any of the companies I work for or have worked for, but I've seen it in the past. It didn't get the comeuppance, but it was at the time. I was like, oh, that's really egregious. And it really does set a very poor example.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Glassdoor, thelayoff.com. There is all sorts of goodies out there about if you're going to take a job, you know, you might want to. There's a guy I listened to on a podcast, and a stock has dropped precipitously, and he's saying, you know, you should maybe buy it. And I was like, dude, go read thelayoff.com for that company and you won't be buying it.
Yeah, absolutely. So many things you can use to kind of get a real, because I think it's culture, isn't it? And that's what things like Glassdoor and Layoff are really good for, is if you want an honest opinion about culture, you go to there. If it doesn't pass the sniff test, then maybe you should think twice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always find the sign of a truly toxic company is all current employees have rated it 5, all past employees rate it 1. And I know a couple of those, and it's like they clearly somebody's holding metaphorical guns to their head for a 5-star review, and once they're gone, it's like no chance at all.
The next question I've got for you is, you speak a lot about ethics. Why is ethical decision making so hard? And when you think about corporations and things, you know, how might ethics play into the impact of the policies that they're trying to implement at work?
So you may have heard this on my podcast. I was recently traveling to give an ethics presentation, and there was a friend of mine's brother-in-law who used to work for one of the big four, uber successful. And he's like, oh, where are you going? You know, we're in the airport making chit chat. And I said, I'm going to Denver. And he's like, for what? And I said, oh, I'm teaching an ethics presentation. He goes, you don't need to teach ethics. He goes, he goes, wow. I was a lawyer and a CPA, and you either know it or you don't. And I just looked at him and I was just like, nice world you live in. But one of, you know, the company that he worked for, they've had quite a bit of issues, let's just say. And I just was like, so the other thing is, and I know, like, Leanne, you know, I pick on lawyers, and I have been to a lot of bad ethics presentations given by lawyers, and they always say it depends. And then they start billing a 6-minute increment. No, they don't always. But like, you know what? I'm going to give you an answer. Now, it might not be the right answer for you, but it is the right answer in my world. And I think the more that we can express our opinions, and, you know, I step in it. I'm surprised I haven't been canceled yet. But I like the ethics, because it'd be great to live in a world where you didn't have to learn about them. But like, there's a great book, Intentional Integrity by Rob Chestnut. Say, for example, that you are on a team and you've been working really hard on a project and you want to reward your team. And you're like, we're going to buy a margarita machine with, you know, our bonus. What happens if you have a recovering alcoholic on your team?
Yeah.
Like, we need to stop and think. And, you know, I'm not all woke. It's the farthest thing from it, lots of people would say. But like, let's just stop and think about how it's going to affect people. Like, and so ethics, I consume a ton of content. I do podcasts. I read just nonstop. I'm on the internet. The more experiences we can have, and I call it diversity of experiences. I'm not all about the whole diversity, like DEI. This is diversity of experiences. The more you can have of those, the better you can deal with this stuff. Like there was a study out there that said you are more likely to be more empathetic if you read fiction because it transports you to a place where you haven't been and you can understand people. So that's why I love to teach ethics. I love to get people thinking. Like the embezzlement, I love my pink collar crime. It is my, baby. But the ethics gets people to really pause and think. So that's why I like it.
Really nice. I'm really glad that you said that fiction readers, as an English literature major at university, I'm like, the stuff Michelle does, I am very ethical, very nice.
Well, of course, doing a literature degree, I mean, if you ever read any John Steinbeck, at least you can empathize with anybody who feels depressed, because you will be depressed after you've read John Steinbeck. I hated John Steinbeck. I'm sorry for any classic lovers out there. I could not abide his books. I'm afraid. One thing I remember, if you'd have said maybe 15 years ago to me, I've worked in tech for 25 plus years, we should have people from the humanities in tech in helping with decisioning, things like people who are into ethics, people who are behavioral scientists, they might as well just said, I've grown an extra head. It was so far out there. But I guess thinking about sort of tech and especially cybersecurity, do you think they would benefit from having more people like behavioral scientists, but more people in ethics? Help me understand the people trying to protect.
Absolutely. And this is a huge topic in AI right now. What you put in is what you get out. And if you're only putting in certain things and you're not thinking about, if you aren't looking back at history, we need a room full of different people. And we're talking different ages. Ageism is huge. We've got to have a room full of people to make not only a better product, but to make it safer for everyone. Look at it's been decades since I saw the Terminator, and the Terminator seemed insane. But look at, we've got robots now. Like, what if we program robots to, there's been face scanning software that isn't good for certain skin colors. Like, it just, we've got to have a room full of people. We can't have all tech people, or we can't have all math people, or we can't have all physics people. We've got to have it, and we have to be able to communicate to each other.
Mm. I think that's where we all fall down, isn't it? Humans have the capacity for communication more than any other species, or at least, that's what we tell ourselves with our big egos. But we just struggle, don't we? And there's a lot of reasons why we disconnect. It could be they seem different to us, so I'm not going to engage, or we put up barriers and things like that, or we don't understand things. And particularly now when we're so polarized like we've never been before, those modes of communication are so shut down. I see this problem being exacerbated over the coming years, not made better. Even with more knowledge around, let's think more ethically. Let's get, as you say, Jeff, 15 years ago, it would be unheard of, but now we do have behavioral scientists coming in and working in tech. But they're coming in, but the scale of actually our inability to communicate with each other is going up. And so it's just a chasing game, really, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's so important. We can't just throw our hands up in the air because it's just too hard.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And on that note, thank you so much, Kelly. You've been a fantastic guest. Really, really enjoyed this conversation. I had to keep forgetting sometimes that I wasn't just listening to your show and actually participate, which does sometimes happen when I interview people. I'm a big fan of their show. But thank you so much. If people want to reach out to you, what is the best way to do it? And how can they find out everything about all the great projects you're working on at the moment?
LinkedIn is probably the best. The Fraudish podcast drops on Tuesday usually. Sometimes there's a blip there. Also pinkcollarcrime.com or kellypaxton.com. But definitely reach out. And this is what you said this at the beginning, Leanne, is like the best things that have happened in my career is from me picking up the phone, sending an email, sending a LinkedIn message. I just got a young woman a fantastic job because she reached out to me. It was pre-COVID, got introduced. I have followed her career and I saw an opening for her, and she's killing it. And it's because she kept in touch. And yeah, so If she had never done that, she would be in the basement working where no one was paying attention to her. And she is going to, she's going to have an amazing career. And it's pick up the phone or the email.
Absolutely amazing. Well, what a kind offer. So Kelly's going to get you a job. But do check her out. What we will do is, as always, put everything in the show notes. So you don't, if you're driving while you're listening to this, be safe. We'll be in the show notes. You can click on that later. But definitely check out her show. It is fantastic. And do connect, because you will enjoy the content Kelly puts out on LinkedIn. I know I certainly do. So thank you again so much. It has been a fabulous discussion. And I feel like I know a lot more now about what I should be looking out for in terms of staff that don't take any holidays. Naughty, naughty.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff and Leanne. It's been delightful and my honor and pleasure.
Whew, can we watch The Beekeeper yet? Please?
Okay, but only for work purposes, so only for this podcast.
Yay.
As long as it's better than The Net, and I'm sorry to those who keep saying I'm wrong about dissing The Net. It's rubbish. If it's better than The Net, then I'll be happy. Anyway, before we go, big shout out to our lovely listener, Sophia Marino, who mentioned us on LinkedIn as part of International Podcast Day, as one of the cybersecurity podcasts that she loves to listen to. So thank you so much.
Stuff like that really helps us reach more listeners, as does leaving us a review. So keep us giving those 5 stars and leaving a comment.
It really, really does. All the resources Kelly discussed in this episode are in the show notes. So check them out at the bottom of wherever you're listening to. But for now, we hope you enjoyed this episode. See you next time. Keep secure. And don't forget to ask yourself, am I the compromising position here?